but now we're going to talk to Roland. Now, we've spoken to Roland, but it must be a couple of years because I think it was down at our old studios in Warrialik, so that was about 2 years ago now. Roland's been involved with the Hartwell Motorcycle Club for many years, and we're going to talk about an event they've got coming up very soon. But first of all, welcome, Roland.
Thank you, Alan.
Roland, when did you first get involved with the Hartwell Motorcycle Club?
1993 is when I first got involved and started having fun. Yeah.
So what first of all made you get involved with the Hartwell Motorcycle Club? And I guess the other issue is, what got you interested in motorcycles, full stop?
All right, motorcycles, I suppose, was interested. Some friends had mini bikes at the time in the earlier days when we were young, and I never got one until I saved up to my paper round and bought my first little dirt bike in 1975. I was 15. And then it just sort of grew from that. My sister had a motorbike too, and she rode on the road, and then I wanted to get a road bike and moved on from there.
So you obviously had a motorbike long before you ever bought a car.
Well, we had paddock bombs.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So you lived on a few acres or something, did you?
Like half an acre or so. We had a paddock where we could hoon around.
Oh, right.
And then, yep.
So if today you just decided, you got up this morning and you thought, I'm just going to go for a day out, would you jump on a bike or would you jump in a car?
Unfortunately, most of the time now I jump in the car. The head wants to go out on the motorbike, but the body's sort of saying, no, it's more comfortable in the car these days.
So it's more for the comfort than anything else.
Yeah, look, when you do get out on the bike, it's great. It just clears your head. You forget about everything. Yep. Just go for a nice cruise. You come back feeling $1 million, I must admit. Yeah. But yeah.
I'll ask you this, which has really got nothing to do with what we're going to talk about, but it's still to do with motorcycles. Why are so many motorcyclists don't want to wear the protective clothing? I've seen them out on shorts. Yeah. And, in fact, I had the Highway Patrol in here only a few months ago, and he'd attended two bikes hit down somewhere around Yarra Junction. And he said neither of them were wearing any protective clothing. Well, I can't imagine if he was skidding along the road what would happen. But why does there an aversion to wearing them?
I really got no idea. I've always worn good gear. I remember a thing that happened years ago. I was 18. I had my motorbike. I called in at the Croydon pub and I just had my new leathers on. I'd been into Mars Leathers and got these custom ones made. And they cost me nearly $300 back then.
Gee, that's a lot of money.
It was a lot of money. And I rocked into the pub and there was other bloke there on his motorbike, says, oh, how much those leathers cost? I said, $275. I'd rather lose my skin. So that's the mentality of some people.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you've only got to fall over and you damage your skin. Imagine skidding along the...
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't even think about it.
No.
All right. So back when you joined the Hartwell Motorcycle Club, what was their main activities? Did you mainly go out on rides at weekends, or were you into motorcycle racing? Was that why was the club set up in the first place?
The club was set up for motorcycle racing. It started in 1931 with some group of mates down in Hartwell, and they got the club together because they wanted to have a go at racing. And there was nothing sort of much around, so they decided to run their own events, and that, and it grew from that.
Because down in Sale yesterday, and I think there's still a Sale Motorcycle Club down there, and there used to be one in Dandenong. Now, it may still exist, but they tell me they used to race down off Franks and Dandenong Road there, but that's all factories now. So I know that you've got this event coming up, but why are the motorcycle clubs of today, and we're not talking about the ones, the patch ones that seem to be calling all the problem, we're talking about just like Hartwell and the Dandenong Club. What's their main activity now? Because, I mean, obviously the Dandenong Racing Club, a Dandenong Club can't race. There's nowhere there where they used to race.
Yeah, they could potentially, I'm not sure, that's more of a dirt bike club, whereas we're more road racing oriented these days.
Right.
But there's still the state motorcycle complex out at Broadford, which other clubs can use.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They can go out there for a dirt bike event. So possibly Dandenong Club may go out there to run an event. I'm not really sure.
Because I'm sort of thinking yesterday down at Sale, it could actually, I mean, there's plenty of bush out of Sale, so you could run races, do whatever you want, providing it. But when you get somewhere like Dandenong, and maybe there are other clubs, I don't know, it's just that I'd heard about the Dandenong Club and I thought, I wonder why they'd even exist anymore.
I think, look, probably because they started there, like our club started in Hartwell, but it's based in Bayswater.
Oh, is it? Now, it's no longer in Hartwell.
Yeah. You know, I suppose you move out where it's cheaper sort of to set up your club.
Yep.
And, but, you know, we've got members all over Victoria and we race at different venues all around Victoria
stuff. So you don't only race out of Broadford, which is what we're going to talk about soon.
No, we Broadford, Phillip Island, Mac Park in Mount Gambier, we go over there too.
Fair.
Yeah, just across the border, that's a good venue.
So when you're talking about Phillip Island, you're talking about the GP track down there?
Yep, the GP track down there.
So that's available to other clubs during the year, is it?
It is, at a price. It's expensive, very expensive.
Is it?
Yeah.
So are you talking thousands?
Oh, yeah, look, I'm not sure of the current price, but it used to be around about $25,000 a day.
A day?
Yeah, so you need to get quite a few members wanting to race there to make it viable.
All right, so one of the things that people say about car racing is that car racing, like I can remember, in fact, I can remember going down to Phillip Island when they were all just people that owned their own cars racing, so that goes back a while. And then there used to be a track up out of Benalla that I used to go to.
Yeah, Winton.
I'm not sure it was Winton. This was just in a farmer's paddock, and they used to just race the local, you know, their old cars.
Yep.
So, and now one of the things that they talk about in car racing is that if you haven't got $1 million, forget it, because that's the sort of money. Have bikes progressed from the days when Joe Blow could buy a bike and go out and hot it up a bit and race it, to something that now has become more of an elite sport because of the cost of getting there? Because of the cost of
it? Yeah, it sort of has. We're still involved with one branch of a part of the racing, which is called bucket racing, which is just it's named after a bucket of bolts. You just basically get a little 125 commuter bike and you can hot it up yourself and you go and race it. And look, you could build a race winner for $2,000, probably get on the track for less than $1,000.
Right.
So, you know, there is an entry level into it, or you can spend, you know, the sky's the limit, depending on what class you go to.
Say you want to go the big stuff. Like, and literally, they can spend up to nearly $1 million on some of these cars.
Yeah.
Would you spend $500,000 on a bike, or is that much too much?
Look, the guys that move up from our club racing to the Australian titles as such, and their teams and racing modern superbikes.
Yep.
Yeah, $500,000 is fairly normal.
Is it?
Yeah.
One other question, God, I've got to take a quick break. We've got some sponsors popped up. With this old time racing that you know, lot years ago, they were running sort of normal cars, so they were like, you wouldn't get 30 miles a gallon or anything like that, but they weren't enormously expensive. They ran on normal fuel.
Yep.
Is that the same with a bike, or when they get hotted up, you're paying sort of triple time for fuel and you're churning through so much fuel?
No, because the way the rules are set up, EPA things that happened a few years ago, you've got to be running on pump fuel.
Do you?
Yeah. So just servo fuel.
So it could be dragging in a lot more because you're putting the motor under pressure, but you're not paying extra amount.
No, look, some of those race fuels, you know, you might be paying $15 a litre.
Yeah.
So, you know, at least we can buy it for $2 a litre.
So when you're saying on that $15, does anybody still race on that sort of fuel, or is that more or less outlawed?
It's not quite outlawed, but in certain classes and certain things they can use it, but the majority don't.
Yeah, it makes it expensive. Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk to Roland because they've got quite a big weekend coming up fairly soon and we'll find out all about it. Rockin' Robin by Michael Jackson. Of course, that's an old song from the 60s, but Michael Jackson hyped it up and reissued it. Now, Roland, you've got... I've just lost my place here. You've got something coming up in November, haven't you? And but you don't have spectators along to this racing, do you?
Yeah. Look, at our club racing... Yeah, it's usually just mates that come along and what have you. But at the Australian Historic Championships that are coming up in 13th to the 16th of November, yes, there will be spectators and it's free to go in and spectate.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it costs you $5 for a program if you want a race program.
That's not
much. But it's free to get in.
Now, it intrigues me, and you've got various categories, which obviously aren't going to will race against each other, but one of them you're talking to up to 1919. Would there be any bikes that would still be in that category racing?
No, look, I've been into historic racing for 30-odd years, and I think I've seen a period one bike. There used to be a guy it was over in South Australia, and he had an old Triumph single-cylinder thing, and no clutch on it, so he couldn't start. So he had to do a rolling start to get going. It was pretty amazing to watch and see this old bike, but no, there's just none of those old ones around anymore.
Well, as you say, if they were, you would think they'd be in a collection somewhere, that somebody might have done them up and put them in a collection, not out racing them around.
Yeah.
What about in the 1920s to... 1945, are there many of them around?
Yeah, look, there's quite a few. They're mainly the old Harleys and Indians, the old WLAs and what have you, like the old army bikes with the hand gear change and the foot clutch and stuff like that, and they go out there and have a race around on them. They're pretty good fun to watch.
They're pretty heavy bikes too, aren't they?
Yeah, heavy and not much ground clearance and stuff, and they wobble, pretty good fun to watch.
So... on a bike like that, what sort of speed would you expect to get up in a race?
Oh, I don't think they go that fast. They're probably only maybe doing 130, 140 maybe at the...
Still 140 k's on a bike, still moving.
Yeah.
And 1946 to 62. Now, are you starting into the better stuff now?
Yeah, that's getting into the more some European bikes, the Ducatis and Vincents, Triumphs, BSA, Velocettes, you know, Aerials, Nortons, those... Mainly the English years, those ones, really.
I've got to take another break in half a minute because I've got another sponsorship sponsor. I was on Facebook only a little while ago and at least one motorcycle manufacturer popped up in Elizabeth Street in the city. So did we make many motorcycles here in Australia?
Look, I think there was... A few. I think there was an Acme. This was sort of back before my time. This was sort of back in the 30s and whatever, where they were mainly like a BSA engine or whatever, and then they put them together here in their own frame and bodywork and stuff.
Because I'm actually talking to somebody tonight as a guest speaker, a guy named Don Ripper, and I think one of his relatives owned some sort of... manufacturing of motorbikes down in Elizabeth Street, but I've seen at least a couple over the years that photos of... I didn't think we'd have had those sorts of places in the city.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the motorcycling mecca, Elizabeth Street.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, look, there was... The whole street was full of motorbike shops back in the
day. Was it?
Oh, yeah.
What? And this is probably an unfair question to ask you, because you...
I'm young.
why would they gravitate to Elizabeth Street?
I don't know. I think it was Modak is about the only shop. It's I think just closed down, and it was run by a guy. His mum when I was around, and she was like about 80 or so back in the time. And it's only just closed down, but it's been run by the family since about the 20s or something. It's just a little shop in there. Yeah.
I've got to take a break, so I've got to go. But we found Peter Stevenson, isn't it?
Peter Stevens.
Steve. There's a couple of them sort of folded, and you just said about this one closing down. Why? There seems to be more bikes around. Is there a reason that we're not selling as many as we used to, or why?
I think they are still selling bikes, but... I think it's just business management is half the problem.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break and we're going to be back to talk to Roland about some more of these years.
Your breath, I reckon. That's a long, long time to live without your love. You know, a minute is just a minute. There ain't many things a man can get done in it. That's a long, long time to live without your love. Time you go away, seconds feel like days, feel like forever. And the sun won't show its face till the moment that we're back together. Oh, darling, the way I'm feeling, I don't even want to waste an hour sleeping. That's a long, long time to live without your love. Feel like forever. don't show its face till the moment that we're back together. You in it every second, every minute. That's a long, long time. Yeah, that's a long, long time. And you know that I can't live without your love.
I'm talking to Roland from the Hartwell Motorcycle Club, and we've been talking about, and Roland will give you more details as we get towards the 3 o'clock news. We've got to be out of here just before three. But, all right, so we're now up to 46 to 62. I want to talk about 63 to 72, but before we start that, Roland, are we finding the bikes are getting lighter, bigger, with more engine power as we're going through these decades?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
What was the biggest difference? Well, we won't go back to 1919 because we didn't know much about brakes and anything. But we'll say from 1945, and we'll go through just to 1990, just as an overview, what's the biggest changes that happened over those years?
Well, I think in the earlier days there was hand gear changes. They went to a foot gear change and, you know, foot clutches and things, and they had retard and advanced mechanisms on the handlebars. Now we've got automatic advances and you've just got a normal throttle. So that's a big advancement that comes through in the 40s, 50s and so.
Yep.
And then we moved on to different things. There's probably a few more into the 60s and stuff. Two strokes coming onto the scene.
Right. What were they before the two strokes?
Pretty much all four strokes back in
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they'd have gone.
There was a few, like the early Bantams and things, and that. There was a few two strokes around, but the majority wanted a 500 full stroke or something, you know, twin cylinder to get around on. Yeah.
So I always find motorbikes dangerous because you're sitting on top of a box and there's nothing between you and the oncoming car. Have they got safer?
Yes, I suppose they have, in that much better braking, better handling, you know, better tyres, better just whole setup on the bikes compared to what they used to be. I think they were slapped together to get to work on and back, and that was about it. But now then they started going faster and you started to put a bit of thought into making them handle and do everything better.
Right. You just mentioned something there. When we originally started with motorbikes, were they just as a mode of transport, as you said, from to and from work and that?
Pretty much. So, you know, that's what they were cheaper than a car.
Yep.
So, you know, people could get to work and back, and, you know, sometimes they might put a sidecar on it to take the kids or whatever, but it was because they were cheaper than a car, pretty much.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was talking to the Lions Op Shop before I started at midday, and they said to me, can you ask Roland, is there still any motorcycle racing with sidecars on them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there? Yeah. We have in our Hartwell Club series, we have sidecars. It's not a lot, you know. Back probably in the 80s and 90s, there was, you know, you might get a field of 30 or something. Yep. They were huge. Now we might get a field of a dozen. Yep. But you know, they are pretty cool to watch.
But it'd also be more dangerous, would it? Because you're taking up a lot more space.
Yeah, take up more space, so it's harder to pass and you know, sidecar swinger, he's hanging out the side. So, you know, someone's got to give him a wide berth so they don't run into them.
Yeah, that's right. You could take someone's head off, couldn't
you? Yeah, you can. But, look, they're all a bunch of good blokes and they all sort of ride together, you know. Yeah.
We're starting to talk now 73 to 82. You've got this forgotten era. Why is it a forgotten era?
I don't know. They just called it forgotten era or they changed it to period 5, but when it first came out it was forgotten era, and I think they called it that in a few other places around the world. Yeah. That was a class that I entered in when I first started racing on my bike. So that's, I think most people, because that's my era, you know. My bike I had was 1978. I was 18. Yep. You know, people go with their era. So you find that the older guys are into the older bikes. Yep. The younger blokes are into the newer bikes that were around in there.
But I'm just wondering why it's forgotten era. Forgotten.
Well, I don't know why it was forgotten, because I think it was the best era. But anyway.
Then why did we come into a new era in 83 to 90?
Yeah, I don't know. That to me, the new era is full fairings, water-cooled bikes and stuff, so they all look the same.
Yep.
The earlier bikes being naked, no fairings and things on them, you can see them. You can see what it is. You can see if it's a twin-cylinder or a six-cylinder or whatever. But now, to me, they're all just covered over. You know, they've got a bit of fiberglass over them. Oh, yeah, that's a red one. That's a black one. I don't know if it's a Honda or a Kawasaki or whatever. You know, that's me anyway.
All right, so back in the early days when they started, you had quite a few at 125cc. So that's a very small motor, isn't it?
Mm.
So is that all they produced in the early days, or how big a motor would they produce in the early days?
Oh, no, they still had bigger engines. You know, 125, I think, was just a class because it was nice and light.
Is that a poster bike almost?
No, look, it could be, but it can be a GP bike too, a Grand Prix bike. Because they made some, you know, full-on factory racing bikes that you could just buy from the factory too if you had a big wallet.
Yep.
But, no, back in the same period, they had 1,000cc V-twins back in the turn of the century, pretty much. Yeah.
All right, so let's just go with this for a minute. So when would you find many 125s around now, like the real small motors, or if someone was going to buy a bike today, not necessarily for racing, just to ride around, what sort of size motor would you get for those?
Look, it depends where you are. I mean, I've got the 125 and just a four-stroke basic commuter bike.
Yep.
And, you know, when we hot them up, they'll top out at about 120 or so. Mm. But stock, they're only do about 80 or 90K an hour. But, you know, if you lived in the city and you just wanted to putt around, go in the traffic up to 80 or 90K, they're perfect. They're easy to move around and that. If you want to go sit on the freeway and go 100 or 110, you really need at least a 250. So, and a little bit more is good in case if someone pulls out in front of you. You've got a little bit of power to get past them or whatever.
You mentioned that. How? Because one of the things they and I know they run campaigns on this, one of the things that they say is that drivers either don't care or they can't see the motorbike. Which is it? Or is it both?
Look, I wouldn't say they don't care. Generally, they just aren't looking. You know, they're I suppose their focus is to look for cars.
Well, and they're driving along. You're conditioned to look for something bigger.
You are. You're looking for something bigger and you're not looking for something smaller. So,
All right. I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Delta Dawn, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by? And did I hear you say he was meeting you here today to take you to his mansion in the sky? She's 41 and her daddy still calls her baby. And all the folks round Brownsville say she's crazy, because she walks downtown with a suitcase in her hand. Could it be a faded rose from days gone by? And did I hear you say he was meeting you here today to take you to his mansion in the sky? Delta Dawn, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by? And did I hear you say he was meeting you here today to take you to his mansion in the sky? Delta Dawn, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by?
Roland, we've been talking all about motorbikes, but one of the major reasons that we were going to talk to you about, you've got a historic race championships coming up, and it's up at Broadford?
Yeah, the State Motorcycle Complex.
Right. Whereabouts in Broadford is it?
Oh, it's on the Broadford Strathcreek Road.
Yep.
From our neck of the woods, we go out through Glenburn and turn off Flowerdale and get around that way, Strathcreek, and yep. There... Or if you're going from Melbourne, you go straight down the highway and you get into Broadford,
yep.
Do a bit of a loop around, and it's only about a mile or so off the highway, off the Hume Highway.
You take the road to Seymour, don't you, to get to Broadford? Am I on the right road?
Oh, you can. Kilmore, that's going up a bit further and coming back.
All right, no, but I mean, you can go up through Kilmore and that. Isn't that the way to go?
Yeah, you can go around across that way.
Yep. All right, so... What hours is it on, and who can come, and sort of tell us a bit more about it, please?
Yeah, well, look, anyone can come. I mean, there's probably still room to time for someone to enter if they've got a bike at home and,
yep.
And want to go in it. But for spectators, it's run on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Thursday's pretty much practice day.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of you go out there in your classes and practice, set your bikes up.
Yep.
So not going to be that many spectators that they'd rather go and watch the racing.
Yep.
Friday morning we do qualifying and then in the afternoon the racing starts. So from Friday right. afternoon, Saturday, Sunday is the racing of all the classes. Right. So the races are basically you get three races over the weekend, over that three-day yep. period and the in each class and... If you win out of those three races, your combined points, you win the Australian title.
Australian title?
Yeah.
So where have you got people coming from? If it's a state title, like they could come anywhere in Victoria, couldn't they?
Yeah, well, this is Australian title and they it's in a different state each year.
Right.
So this year Victoria's got it.
So where do you anticipate people coming from?
We know there's a group coming over, they come from Western Australia to put their bikes in a shipping container and bring them over.
So they ship them over, do they?
Yeah, I'll bring them in the truck, or the train and bring them over and that, yep. So, yeah, so they do come from all over, people from Queensland and stuff. You know, when we were doing the Australian titles, we travelled all over Australia too.
Did you?
Yeah, went to Western Australia a few times racing and, yeah, that's all just part of it, you know.
Just part of the gig.
Yeah.
So... Just, I mean, obviously the people who are coming along to watch the race can't, but do the racers sort of set up camp on the site for the weekend? Or?
Yeah, look, it's not a bad camping site there because it's, I don't know, the property's probably 500 acres or something. It's pretty big.
Yep.
And so there's a good area, good toilets, showers, facilities and stuff. Yep. There's a good canteen there and big area for camping. And so I think it's... $25 a night to camp.
That's not much.
And if you want to camp, so spectators can come out there If they want to watch for a few days, they can camp out there. We usually sit around and have a few beers at night, sit around a campfire and
you
stuff.
You wouldn't want to be drinking too much if you had a race these
days. You pace yourself. But, you know, but it's a good atmosphere, you know, over night time too. You can just sort of wander around and talk to people.
So, well, we just laughed about that. Is there a you have to be a zero alcohol to race?
Yes.
Yeah. So do they test you before a race?
Occasionally. It's just sort of like pretty much you're told that there could be testing.
Right.
It's the same as like ASADA, the testing body. They can walk around and test anyone in Australia, you know.
Okay.
And they can come in, same as police can come in, whatever, you know. So they just said the Yoc Health and Safety people, WorkSafe, can come in if, you know, if you... leads are on the ground and stuff, you know. So, you know, you've got to do everything to
And you wouldn't want to be particularly pulling 100 k's an hour in a race if you're a bit chicken either, would you?
No. So, I mean, look, the guys out there, they're pretty serious about their racing. It's fun, but, I mean, they're serious. They're there to do a job too, so they're not going to go there and play up and, you know, and get out there.
And in all racing, and they warn you this, it's a dangerous sport.
Yeah.
It's a whether it be cars or trucks or bikes, it's a dangerous sport.
It is a dangerous sport, but it's probably no more dangerous than footy or whatever. You know, you can get an injury.
Generally, you can crash at 100 kilometres. It'd be worse.
Yeah, you've got good safety gear. You've got your good full leathers and boots and good helmet. So
let's just take that for half a second. You've brought that up. So to go in a race, like, you're not going to let them ride in shorts and things like that, are you?
No, we've got. Basically, your rules of what sort of gear you have to wear.
Yep.
Your helmets are not allowed to be more than 10 years old. You know, so you've got quality gear. I mean, you can have leathers that have got scratches on them from falling off a few times, but so long as they've not got holes in them, you know, people fall off and you just get them patched up and use them again.
Okay. Roland, what's the worst accident you've ever had or the damage you've done to yourself in your years of racing? Have you broken bones?
No, not racing.
Haven't you?
No. I've done it on the road, but on the racetrack, fallen off a couple of times and just slid, you know, been fine.
Yep.
And the good thing about that too, because you always have the first aid people, the AMBOs there. So whereas if you fall off on the road, you might be an hour before an AMBO comes to you.
Yeah.
They're there within seconds. So, you know, it's good.
I'm amazed that you've been involved with motorcycles that long racing and you haven't had a broken bone.
Well, maybe I haven't been riding fast enough. Is that the problem, probably?
Now, let's tell the people again. It's at Broadford?
Broadford, the State Motorcycle Complex, and it's November 13 to 16.
And how much for spectators?
Free for spectators.
Yep.
And $5 for a program if you want a program, and if you want to camp out there too, $25 a night.
That's terrific, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. It should be a good thing. Hopefully we get maybe a couple of hundred bikes out there. So,
I was gonna
ask
you that.
So it'll be a good spectacle and some interesting stuff there too.
So if you're not going to be racing, what plus will you pay at the weekend?
Well, I got a job scrutineering. So as we were talking before, people come in and I check their gear and check their bikes that they're up to their safety spec and whatever.
No, I won't ask you that. I was going to say, do you ever get any privateers who try to break the rules? I suppose you would, because every sport that happens.
Oh, you do. And some people whinge about it when you do knock them back at scrutineering too.
Yep.
And they'll say, well, look, this is the rules. You've got a rule book.
Yep.
It's not that hard to read it and stuff, but you've got to try and be polite. And sometimes you get a lot of abuse for trying to do the right thing.
I guess the other thing, though, too, is that you're only trying to protect them, aren't you?
That's it. And in the end, too, if something happens and they badly get hurt or whatever, they'll be coming back to look at you for something and say, well, he let me go out there with a hole in my leathers or an old worn-out helmet or something. So, you know, you're protecting yourself as well. But following the rules, that's all.
If I said to you today, money's no object, what would be your ultimate bike that you'd want to buy?
Oh, the Honda CBX 1000, of course.
Is it? And how much are they worth? I don't know.
Oh, look, you can't. You know, they're 1978. They're old stuff. That's what I'm into. So they're, you know, probably $20,000 to $30,000.
Are they?
Yeah.
And there's still plenty around, or
not really. There's probably a couple hundred in Australia.
Is that all?
Yeah.
All right. So that's the era you won.
Yep.
But if you still had plenty of money, and because I'm not here to put any down, but they tell me that Harley Davidson, although they're an expensive bike and they make a lot of noise, they don't have the newest of technology. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. But most of the riders that want a Harley like the old technology.
Yeah, they want
the... They just want the old style and just cruise along and that's it. They don't want the modern high-tech stuff that's, you know.
What could... I'm running out of time fast here. What would be the most expensive motorbike floating around for road use?
In general terms that you could buy, it's probably a new Ducati or BMW... that's probably around about $50,000, which you can buy off the floor,
and all you do with that you're just riding that around,
on the road, and be probably uncomfortable, but very fast.
Righto, 13th to 16th of
November,
Broadford at the
Australian Historic Road Race Championships.
So people need to. Well, they don't have to book, do they?
No,
they have
just, to buy tickets. Just rock on up.
Just come on.
You know, if it's a nice day, cruise on out and have a look.
I've got to go. Thanks for your time, Roland. I hope it's a great weekend for you.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks.